Welcome to episode 2 of the Imperial College Business School podcast. Today, we're speaking about diversity. We'll be the first to agree that it's a buzzword, but it's with good reason that everyone is talking about it. Today, we're really going to get to the crux of why diversity and inclusion, also known as D&I, is important, both from a business school context and in the workplace. The question we're going to answer today is, what is the value of D&I? We have some really interesting guests with us today. From the business school, we have Joel McConnell, Executive Director of Marketing, Recruitment and Admissions, and Leila Guerra, Associate Dean of Programs, who are both experts and proponents of diversity at business schools and beyond. Later, we'll be joined by one of our students who is really involved in the space, India Love, on our full-time MBA, who recently hosted our diversity and inclusion panel at the business school. She will share her first-hand experiences of D&I and the importance of diversity from her perspective. Joel, Leila, welcome to the podcast. It's really great to have you here today.
Hi, Nicole. How are you doing?
Very well, please.
Thank you for having us in.
Before we start, can you tell me a little bit about yourselves, your role here at Imperial?
My name is Leila Guerra. I'm the Associate Dean of Programs, and I work with the Marketing, Recruitment and Admissions team, all the program teams, the Careers, EdTech and Rankings departments.
And I'm Joel McConnell, working very closely with Leila on all her areas of remit and taking a particular interest in structuring our teams, putting in place the right technology for those teams, and working on external relations projects.
Well, thank you. It's great to have you both here today. So before we launch into it, where did your interest in diversity begin, both of you?
It might be worth saying that I was born in a family with, I'm the middle sister. I have two brothers and my parents never made a difference. There was never a gender discussion at my home. We lived in 7 countries and we never had any discussion around ethnicity or racial differences or sexual orientation differences. It was always a matter that everyone is the same. And so I took that for granted. It was only when I started in the workplace and mostly when I joined the higher education environment that I realized that that was not the norm.
You know, and I think growing up in Canada, I think it's a country that by design is sort of embraces diversity in a multicultural type society. I think so. You know, I grew up in a very international sort of environment. We spoke French at home, went to French schools, but I grew up in the English speaking part of the country and sort of had a lot of stops on my way to London, most recently having spent 12 years in Spain. But I would say that my, you know, formal interest in diversity in a professional context really started when I was at my previous institution in Madrid. So working with global organizations that partner with business schools to make it less challenging for women to get into top business schools and access the kind of training and network required to help them get onto executive boards more quickly.
Can you share with me, what are business schools doing overall to be proponents of diversity and inclusion?
I think that there are plenty of ways that organizations and business schools specifically can do things internally to facilitate a diverse and inclusive environment. Here at Imperial College Business School, you know, we do have programs in place that give students access to things such as what we call global experiences. So, you know, trips that take the whole group together to continue the learning process in a location that is not where home campus is here in London, which gives them exposure to different cultures, different ways of doing businesses, and really to be able to apply what they're learning to, let's say, international contexts. There's also ways to work with organizations that accredit you and so give you public recognition for the work you're doing. So Athena is another, you know, accreditation that we are active participants of, and we are Athena accredited. We're working with an organization called Reaching Out MBAs, which is an organization specifically designed to help LGBT professionals get access to top business schools with financial assistance, become part of a fellowship program, access mentorship networks, access career opportunities. So there are many ways institutions can facilitate internal programs or work with external bodies to fast track that sort of inclusive and diverse environment they look to build here at this business school on campus, for example.
This year we have initiated the LGBT Career Club. We are fostering initiatives that work around the internationalism of the clubs and the student experiences. All our students go have access to field trips and international experiences that get them out there and who they can immerse themselves in different cultures and different destinations. We also offer training. I mentioned the active bystander training, cross-cultural training, unconscious bias training, how to be aware, what are your unconscious or conscious bias and what you want to do about them. But in addition to that, there's a broader moment where all the business schools, many of the business schools we partner with, are working together to potentially influence rankings. Our rankings measuring diversity in a way. It cannot just be how many nationalities you have in the classroom. Diversity goes far more beyond that. What are you doing on inclusion? How can the accreditation bodies, EQUIS, AACSB, AMBA, how can they include diversity and inclusion as elements that recognize business schools around the world? And that's something we are having an active conversation with our partner schools.
Bringing it back to the students, do you think that the students who embrace D&I will be at an advantage when it comes to their career post-studying?
I think that students go to international schools that really do focus on having a truly diverse and inclusive classroom environment are much better prepared upon graduation to go and create a real impact, positive impact for companies. And certainly that's sort of what cognitive diversity is about. You know, it's not just a great experience. We meet interesting people from all over the world, and you know, perhaps you have some good debates. It's really becoming better at making decisions and working, leading teams, because you see and do things differently, and that can be collecting data. But ultimately, it's about creating more globally prepared graduates that companies find more attractive versus perhaps schools that have less of a focus on international class profile that is less able to compete in a truly globalized economy.
Leila, can you continue to expand? What are the benefits of a diverse cohort of students like what we see here at Imperial?
Yes, but can I go back to the question? I mean, I agree with what Joel had said, but I think there's an even more basic answer to that. It's the right thing to do. I mean, we just cannot have a discussion around what are the benefits. I think potentially that a conversation, the question should be, what are the negative effects of not having it? Because that should be our standards. We should be in a world where diversity and inclusion is out of the agenda because everyone sees that as a normal thing. Diversity and inclusion is very important to Imperial College Business School and to Imperial College overall. That doesn't necessarily mean we can now put a list together of what that would actually entails. Diversity is not only the number of nationalities we have in the school. We have over 100 nationalities. It is not necessarily only the importance we give to big gender balance, and we do have gender balance programs in many of our areas. It is also not just the training we offer to our students and to our staff, such as active bystander training, unconscious bias. Those are all ingredients that have to be there and that we keep adding. It's just also the environment and the importance. College and every single member that is part of this college is giving or should be giving to this important way of living, I'd say.
In recent headlines, we've noticed that there's been more dialogue about mental health and mental well-being. What are we doing about this in Imperial?
Actually, Nicole, I thank you for that question. I think this is a really important topic and one that is being discussed across the UK. So let me try to answer in two ways. One is what we as a school have available for student support and well-being services, which is actually quite broad and is being developed as we speak even further. That ranges from college tutors to give students confidential advice. We have an international student support team. We have the Student Advice Center. We have mindfulness sessions. We have PG tutors and support even for languages. So it's really a broad range of support. When it comes to pastoral care and the need to have someone you can speak to for many of the occasions that can arise, both the college and the business school have invested in that and have expanded that team. Everyone who has a student-facing role as a staff member gets trained so that they can understand how to support any kind of situation or how to, if you're not the right person to speak to, how can you refer those students to the right person to speak. And so student support and well-being services are core to us and are very important. And we're well aware that it's something that particularly in UK institutions, there's a need for more. Having said that, one thing that we as a school potentially have to just consider when we look at this is that mental health taboo exists. And many of our staff, colleagues who are officers in this are educating us on how to address that taboo and how can we have an open conversation about that. And that goes even from not speaking about mental health as something that happens only when you are not having it, when you are maybe on unwell, but actually mental health is something that we all have to cater for and protect.
Where do we draw the line with diversity and how do we ensure that everyone is represented fairly without it becoming a cliche?
I think that, you know, I suppose you could go too far for diversity. I'm not sure if you could, but I guess you can make that argument. But I think the important bit is having enough difference in perspectives to have really rich debates and really question, establish preconceptions about how things are and how things should work. So you really can come up with the best ideas and projects and approaches to doing things going forward.
So how do you not go too far, or can you go too far, just as Joel said?
Oh, I think in everything you can. Potentially, one thing we have to remember is we are a UK institution based in Europe, and we do have some common guidelines on how we work together, live together, study together. And that's something that is important for us. It just sets some standards. And it's finding the balance between what does it actually mean. So I'll give you a very simple example. We do have Saturdays and Sundays weekends, which in other areas of the world doesn't happen. And we do have a period of festivities that happens to be at the end of December. and also those are the things that that are important because of our location. Having said that, we try to embrace everyone and always be very communicative and open on what are those standards. The freedom of having different mentalities should also not be imposed. And so for me, when someone is trying to impose to someone else a mentality or a point of view, no matter how diverse it is, that's where we'll just have to find a balance and talk to each other.
To continue on this tangent, for those who are critical of diversity, a lot of the arguments have been around how we better using homegrown talent. However, you could argue that one of the prime benefits of globalization is how it increases the talent pool of available students, therefore increasing healthy competition. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, as a recent arrival here in the UK, I think that you need to have a balance of both global and local as well. And so I think that, you know, we talked about before going too far with diversity. And so I think that you do have to find that sweet spot where you'll also get the benefit of the perspectives and viewpoints of the local culture as well, where that institution is located.
Our responsibility is to find talent no matter where and give them access to education, to top high education, and offer them global careers. But we try to always balance it. And that means we have significant campaigns in the UK. And we always want to make sure that the talent, the access to our programs is available in all areas of the UK. But we also want to make sure that our UK students have a very global environment and diverse environment. And that means they will have classmates from all these 100 countries I mentioned. It's this balance of your international career strategy, your international program strategy, but also not forgetting where you're based and the importance of UK access as well.
And looking at it on the workplace level, so what industries are really succeeding in D&I? Where do you think there needs to be more work done?
Potentially everywhere needs to be more work done. So here's the thing, you have the easy answer. Of course, we might say big technology companies have been quite visual around how strongly committed they were to diversity and inclusion. But as we have seen recently, it's not everything gold that shines. And so even there are still some significant changes that need to happen. The Gen Z students and candidates come with a very different attitude towards how their job is going to be and how their studies are going to be. And that will change the landscape potentially. But I couldn't say one big example that we are following. I think for us, at least at Imperial College Business School, it's being humble about where we are, understanding that we are very committed, we're very vocal, from the dean all the way to every single member of staff. We're very vocal about this is an open place. The president has been very, very outspoken about this as well. But we're also aware that that it's a learning opportunity for all of us. And every day, there's a moment where you say, oh, okay, I actually hadn't considered that. And that journey, that learning journey, just makes us a better place to be for our students, for our staff, and for our faculty.
So, Joel, anything to add there? What do you think can be done to continue championing diversity, both here at Imperial and also at a business level?
Yeah, no, I think what you saw this year, you know, the 50 years since Stonewall year, you saw a lot of companies sort of getting on the wagon, let's say, with, you know, rainbow colored logos and these kinds of things too. I would hope that this year serves as sort of a foundation year where companies say, okay, we're behind this. Now we're going to put in place internal mentorship networks. We're going to actively support LGBT professionals, for example, who want to go on and get additional studies to go into leadership positions. We're going to actively think about programs that can engage with women as perhaps they step out and start their families, but make it easier for them to get back in and do so quickly enough so they can also get onto executive boards. So it's not just a question of, you know, the superficial, the packaging, let's say, but develop concrete programs and really work with universities and other top organizations that have something to say about this. And they're going to have programs that feed these sort of D&I type candidates into senior executive positions where they can go on and have an impact themselves as senior leaders of organizations.
I think before we end this interview, I do want to take this platform, if Nicole, if you don't mind, to extend an open invitation to everyone who's listening. We certainly have only mentioned a few elements of diversity and inclusion today. We've tried to touch base on many of them, but obviously it cannot happen in a short interview. So the open invitation is, the school has a diversity and inclusion committee, both for staff and for students. If there's something we have missed or something that you would want to bring to our attention, that you would consider the business school environment, our students, our staff could benefit of, please reach out to us. As I said, the listening and being active about it is very serious. And so here you have a formal invitation to reach out to us and let us know how else or what else we could be exploring.
Thank you, Joel and Layla, for sharing your expertise today. It's been so interesting to hear about D&I at an institutional and a corporate level and hearing what Imperial College Business School is doing to be champions of this.
Thank you so much, Nicole. It's been a pleasure.
Always a pleasure, Nicole. Thank you.
Imperial College Business School offers 4 different MBA programs, each one tailored to match your career goals and circumstances. Our mix of full-time and part-time programs ensure that if you are looking to take the next big career move or advance your career without taking your foot off the pedal, you'll be getting the best education from an institution respected by employers and decision makers across the globe. Click the link in the description to find out more about Imperial College Business School and our MBA programs. Future you starts at Imperial.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining us. Today, we're talking about the importance of diversity from the classroom to the workplace. Joining us on the podcast now, we have India Love, who is a full-time MBA student at Imperial College Business School. India was born in Mississippi and spent adulthood in New York City, graduating from NYU in flute performance. Before the MBA, she was a senior travel manager at Andela Inc. India is a huge proponent of D&I on campus, and we're really honored to have her here with us today. So welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So can you tell me on a personal level, why is diversity and inclusion so important to you?
Yes, absolutely. So first, I'd like to start with a preface of my own identity. I am from the U.S. and I identify as an African-American, and I came from a lower middle class background out of Mississippi. So all of those intersections together have always brought about an awareness for me, because in one or all spaces that I've generally operated in, from my childhood and social environment to education into working environments, I've always found a lapse in one of those identities being being represented in whatever social space or whatever space I was in. For those who may not be aware, Mississippi has a very rich and complicated history. So coming off of the backs of so many different social inequities, there's just been a lot of dynamics that have taken shape and are actively changing even as of today. But in terms of where I grew up in Mississippi and my town, it was 50% Black and it was 50% white. And in terms of the power structures, I observed that most of the time, Black Americans were underrepresented when it came to power and wealth. And when it came to the criminal justice system, I saw an overrepresentation of Black Americans. And so for me, this always drove this conversation of why is that happening? How do we get out of that? What have I internalized from these kinds of observations? Because one of the things that I noticed from some of my fellow classmates in elementary school and high school is that while I was able to break out of that mold and kind of get out of some of those implicit associations that were stamped upon me, was that I try to manipulate or manage myself outside of those kind of confines. And some of my peers weren't even aware of those impressions that were being made and internalized and reenacted to create this self-perpetuating cycle.
So at 18 years old, you ended up in New York City. So how did that then shift your approach on D&I?
Oh, man, it was another defining era for my life in a way. New York City is super, super diverse. For the first time, my life literally went from Black and white to all shades in between and beyond. And it was just the most incredible experience in a way, because even for the things that I thought I had cast away in terms of my identity and my associations, being in New York just gave me new areas and identities in which to strive for. For all the growth that I had and understanding I had for my own personal identity, I noticed that there were so many other areas to learn about that were outside of that. I too had to learn about other areas of diversity that I was not aware of at the time. And it was a great discovery. It took many years to really get a good grasp of the cultural and diverse landscape that is New York, but it was a really rewarding experience. And now, you know, I constantly use that as a framework for my life and my working experience everywhere I go.
And the next step in your journey was arriving in London, which again is another very multicultural city. So can you tell us a bit about that transition?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, at this point, coming back to London, I studied abroad here in my undergrad. But coming back again as an adult at going to school here, there were some experiences I expected from this. And one being an African-American female coming into the UK. But also, unfortunately, there's a political association there that isn't so positive on a global scale at the moment. So it was kind of coming in, being aware of all of these different identities and associations and, you know, making sure that above everything else, that my own personal brand is, you know, reflective of what I want it to be. And kind of if I'm noticing that there are some wrong associations or impressions there, just kind of bringing that to the forefront and adjusting or educating people along those lines around that.
Since being on campus at Imperial, you've been at the helm of a lot of D&I initiatives, and that's why we're so excited to have you here today. As a president of the Business School's Innovation Entrepreneurship Club, you've run a couple of really interesting panels that have helped to begin this conversation around D&I. Why did you come up with the idea of the inclusion panel?
Yes, well, it was a diversity and inclusion panel. That was one of the most direct events that we had around this conversation. So I'll go into that one, and then I'll also lead back to another one we had earlier in the year. But I knew from the onset when I was petitioning for a leadership role inside of the Innovation and Entrepreneurship Club that I wanted to force that conversation of diversity into the practice of entrepreneurship and the practice of innovation. So that was one of the things that I was intentional about from the very beginning. As I began to kind of think about how to execute on it, because there's so many different approaches that you can take when it comes to diversity and inclusion, I really began to think about, you know, what London as a whole offers around these conversations and how to begin to form it against the, you know, intellectual intellectual capital and experiences we have even within the committee itself. And so from my observations, I saw that most of the students really resonated with panels because it provided a diverse thought. And I wanted to make sure that both sides of that representation of entrepreneurship and innovation were also at the forefront. And then we ended up with three individuals who were committed to come in. And now my next challenge around that was that I wasn't successful in getting women on my diversity and inclusion panel for an event. We had the date locked in. And I remember wrestling with this with my committee members, knowing that it wasn't the perfect panel. It wasn't the perfect curated panel because I wanted women, that female representation on our panel. And I reached out to three times as many women in time to get them involved in the event. And it just did not work out.
So how did you yourself manage to tackle this? How did you deal with the fact that you wanted to have this really diverse panel talking about diversity, but you couldn't get that representation?
It was really tough, to be honest with you, because some of these things you feel as if it's your duty to make it a perfect representation and a perfect panel because it's your one shot at diversity. But then I realized that the whole purpose of this club and the whole purpose that I tried to drive within our committee and our events was that this is an ongoing conversation. And I can just be upfront. When we actually had the event, that was the first thing I brought out in the introduction, was that, you know, this is the panel that we have, and they certainly are champions of diversity. They lead in diversity in their respective spaces. Yes, there was a limitation in terms of having that female representation on the panel. However, we also had a moderator for the event, and she was a woman. So we had a bit of that come into play, and we even asked questions around gender anyway, just to make sure that that was something that was kind of present in the conversation. But I think sometimes, and the reality is that it's just imperfect, and it's a perfect kind of, it's symbolic of the reality across a lot of corporate boards and senior leadership. While it wasn't perfect, I think it's a great example of how, you know, these are the kinds of things that you have to work around in your initiatives that you're trying to drive in spite of that.
And now this is one of two events that you ran over the year that tackled D&I. What was the other one?
Yes, thanks for reminding me. So earlier in the year, the very first event that we actually ran, it was something that was led by Imperial. They wanted to take part in this new annual series, Global Women's Entrepreneurship Week, which I guess happens across college campuses around the world. And Imperial wanted to, for the first time, take part in that. And so that was one of our first challenges after we started the panel, or we started our committee, rather, to create an event in honor of that. And so the pressure was high to make sure we're not only doing women entrepreneurship a good justice, but it was also okay in the line of the Imperial brand, which we were all still getting used to, by the way. What do we do here to, you know, put forth an engaging, compelling event? And it just so worked out for us that someone on the committee knew a woman entrepreneur who had moved here from Jordan to start a bakery. And she came in and she gave a great talk. And it was just a very authentic, candid kind of exercise of like walking us through her experience starting a business here in the UK, coming from a different region of the world, and trying to implement the success that she had in Jordan into the UK and London. Was just a really great kind of representation for the campaign.
What's really great about both of the panels that you've run here at Imperial is that the business school has given you that platform to have these conversations and raise these issues around D&I. Reflecting now on the MBA as a whole, how did you find Imperial handled diversity and inclusion?
I think Imperial has done a good job at diversity and inclusion from a lot of different angles. Again, this is a very evolving and emerging space. We're just now getting to a time and place where diversity and inclusion is an ongoing conversation at the forefront of organizations and schools globally. So I've, from my experience coming from the US, it was kind of refreshing to see diversity and inclusion integrated at all levels within the school. I think if anything, Imperial has a consistent imprint on the conversation of diversity and inclusion. And it isn't perfect like many other organizations and areas. There's just room for growth. But I think the best thing about Imperial is that they're aware of that and we can have those candid conversations. So I've had the pleasure of speaking with Associate Dean Layla about some of these diversity and inclusion initiatives, in addition to different employees within the admissions team about some diversity initiatives as well. But I very much like that I can have those conversations and I don't have to have a particular title in which to go forth and speak to people across the campus about some of these different implementations, and that they try to take those into account as they're building their admissions, as they're building or creating their programs for the year. And that's just been really nice, because for where the U.S. is, you would think that there would be less to do on the forefront of diversity. That's actually been an area that's been challenging in different pockets, in different industries and different organizations as well.
What is your advice to institutions and workplaces who want to grow and create more discussions around D&I?
So again, you know, this is just from my experience. I think every organization is going to have to take into a lot of different variables and in their own regional and cultural practices. But I do think it's just important to have an ongoing conversation and in your organization and bake it into your systems and governance. It should never be a one-off conversation. And these are just some of my observations from U.S. companies. But there have been cases where there have been huge advertising disasters that have actually caused various businesses to lose millions and millions of dollars because they suddenly have the backlash from the communities that they have offended. And then as a result, they have to step back and shut down their stores globally for a day so that they can do a diversity training or a diversity workshop. And that's just money they would not have had to spend if they had put a little more effort into their diversity and inclusion initiatives. That brings me to the next point of it being incredibly important to make sure you have diversity and inclusion at the very top of your organization. So if that is not there, I feel that organizations are doing themselves a disservice, and that will look different in different parts of the world, but you have to make sure that you are operating in a space that has the most intersectionalities represented in your senior and executive leadership. That is absolutely critical. But then again, it cannot just sit there. It needs to reverberate down the chain. So you need to tie in diversity and inclusion initiatives and goals into, you know, whatever the business goals and objectives are, and make that something you report on religiously and bake that into the fabric.
What about at an individual level? So we've talked a lot about the higher levels and organizations that really need to come from the top, but what can we each do and what can our listeners do to help foster a more diverse and inclusive workplace, especially when sometimes you don't feel like it's coming from above?
I think it's twofold. So it's very easy to say that even if it's not coming from above and you're looking around and you're seeing all the areas for improvement on this conversation, you can drive those conversations with your manager and even looking around to see how you yourself can be an advocate for diversity in space. Is it a matter of doing a training or a knowledge share with some of your peers? Or if you've like lived in another part of the world and you've seen business practices that are done that make business better within your own organization, can you just lead the forefront on some of that capital that you've accumulated from your own, you know, experiences there? But also, I think another important component of this is not only just, you know, looking outwards and building from your environment around you, it's also looking in. And I have to say, you know, even on a personal level, that's something I have to work on for myself, that accountability on an internal level. it's really important to make sure you're aware of your own blind spots. Even for myself, sitting at the intersection of being a woman, being Black, being American, coming from a lower middle class background, coming from a smaller, poorer state inside of the U.S., I still have areas that I can grow on, such as like, do I have blind spots around mental health, or do I have blind spots around ableism or gender identity? Like, where else also can I do my own work, you know, to build up my own knowledge around these areas that I'm not as familiar with, and how can I challenge those? So yeah, I think overall, just kind of circling back, diversity is going to be different depending on an organization, its industry, and its region. So the first thing is to realize that the conversations around diversity are going to be different. And it, of course, it can be helpful to look at, some of the roadmaps or practice areas of practice for other organizations or other businesses. But most importantly, I think you have to realize that it's evolving, and it's only going to make the most sense when you drive and cultivate something from within. But even the conversation of diversity 10 years ago was different from the conversation of diversity here in 2019. So how I look at it is making sure you have a constant space for diversity, but it should be open to evolution and adaptation to the concerns at that particular time. Because if we're looking at making the most expansive, robust diversity and inclusion initiative and creating that platform, it's still going to be outdated a year from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now. So that's the first component, is just having an ongoing check. Because again, these concepts and these ideas are relevant for right now. They'll be outdated tomorrow.
India, it has been an absolute pleasure having you with us today. You have shared so much insight from your experiences, and we're so proud to have you as a student and a future alumnus of Imperial College Business School with all the incredible work that you do in D&I.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure being here today.
We hope that you enjoyed today's podcast. If you have any questions about the topics today or want to find out more about the Imperial MBA, email us at bs-recruitment@imperial.ac.uk. To keep up with our latest news, you can always follow us on Twitter at Imperial Biz, or find us on Facebook and LinkedIn by searching Imperial College Business School. Thanks so much again for listening. And if you want to get the next episode automatically, please hit subscribe in your podcast app.